Think about this.
Our brains change.
Memory is an amazing.
What you think is in
our
there
brains
is
aren't
really
finished. They're not fully cooked yet.
You go with your heart.
You don't have any idea why
we're so smart.
Most of the things that we're doing. But here's the deal.
I opened the door.
Opened the door, and then
And my head.
And your head, right.
And shut the door.
And shut the door.
And then another and then train went right by me.
Zoom. Yep. So, right. I'm Art Markman.
I'm Bob Duke.
I'm Rebecca McEnroy, and this is Two Guys on Your Head. Today, the first in our series on the psychology of near misses, flashbulb memories, and decision making.
November of 1963, John F. Kennedy is shot. And for those people who were alive then, it is a vivid memory that they have of where they were when they found out that President Kennedy had been shot. And it is a nearly universal experience for Americans alive at that point that they had a vivid memory of where they were, who they were with, what they were thinking, everything about it. And this experience so fascinated Roger Brown, who was a titan in the field of psychology, that in the late 1960s, he wrote a paper with a colleague on what they called flashbulb memories, which, you know, dates the thing a little bit. But the idea is that they made the argument that an emotionally charged situation is not one that you can analyze particularly well in the moment. And so they argued that the brain has what they called a now print mechanism that basically just holds on to as much information as you can about that situation so that it'll be available later for you to figure out what happened. So from an evolutionary standpoint, you imagine, okay, I just got attacked by an animal. And in the moment, I really shouldn't spend time thinking about the situation. I should just get the heck out of there. But it would be useful later to have enough detail about that to be able to analyze what happened so that I don't get into the same kind of situation later. Since that original paper, every time that there's a national disaster, psychologists go running out to study this. So when the Space Shuttle Challenger exploded, people went out and started collecting people's memories about, like, the day after, where were you? And then comparing that to 6 months later, what did you remember? 9/11, same thing, right? So whenever there have been these tragedies, there have been studies of this. We're going to park that for a moment. But one of the things to bear in mind is that when we have studied these kinds of memories, because you want replications of this, and you want to be able to find out, like, where people were at the time, you know, you can't create emotionally charged memories for people most of the time. So you're stuck trying to find something that is of national significance to a group, which is why every time there's a big tragedy like this, psychologists go running off to study this. But the reason that mechanism exists, though, is not so that we can all have a collective memory of some national disaster. That would be a weird evolutionary process that we're going to project that sometime in the future there are going to be these huge societies that are going to have these shared experiences. But rather, presumably, that experiences that are potentially dangerous and really important to me will be things that I will store for analysis later. So, Rebecca, prior to us starting this show, regaled us with several studies of near misses involving bicyclists who are alive through the luck of the draw, as well as hands that are still attached to bodies through the
and
luck
heads.
Of the draw. Yeah. And so, and all of us have had experiences in which there has been some sort of near miss. But it's hard to study those because they're individual things. But I think it's the same mechanism at play. But the question is it also accurate? And the answer there is, there are systematic errors that creep in to your report later that are the same kinds of errors that happen in all kinds of eyewitness testimony. So people will begin to conflate stuff that they saw at the time with things that they read later or versions of the story that they've told subsequently.
But I mean, the thing is you're talking about, that's the important distinction,
is that what's recollected is the emotion. I mean, fear is a wonderful response because it saves us from a lot of things, right? And if you have something especially that's a near miss, it would be bodily injury or something, some catastrophe would happen. It's useful to remember that. But as Art's saying, memories work like memories work, and subsequent recollections of that memory, each one of those recollections requires us to reconstruct the memory. And every time we reconstruct any memory, there's the opportunity for things to creep in that weren't really part of the original experience. But the emotion doesn't change, because the emotion is what actually triggers all of that, and then something happens, and now there's something that's preserved in that.
But actually, I want to pick up on this for a second, because what's fascinating is with most memories, actually, eventually the emotional content gets pulled away.
Yeah.
So we've talked on previous shows about how sleep actually helps to separate the emotional content of most memories from the memory itself, but it doesn't happen here, and it doesn't happen in part. Because if you get back into a situation that's kind of like that one, it would be really useful to be scared right about now, because you may very well be in danger. But if sleep had enabled the fear to be separated from that memory, you might think, well, how bad could it
be?
So continuing to experience that fear, I think, is really adaptive.
Yeah.
Because it's going to prevent you from sticking your head out of a open train door at high speed.
Yeah, but what's interesting about it too is that because we sort of generalize across different kinds of stimulus, I mean, sometimes you can be fearful of something and you might even remember why this is uncomfortable for you or why this is fear producing. Because the emotion's there. There's enough of a memory there that something gets activated because all the cues that are happening right now are now popping into your head. Those memories are activated, and now that emotion's there. Because I don't think we fully recognize how much of our decision making, how much of our actions are driven by how things feel. You know, we like to think we're cognizing all of this and I've got a legal pad with it. No, it just doesn't feel good. So I'm either going to approach that or avoid that based on what my feelings are. And that's something that I don't think we really recognize.
Next week, we'll continue our series on the psychology of near misses with Dr. Art Markman and Dr. Bob Duke, looking at memory, trauma, and PTSD. David Alvarez is our engineer, and I'm Rebecca McEnroy. I produce Two Guys on Your Head at KUT Radio in Austin, Texas.